Afnun Aleph on Beis, Meisvei, and that would be, if you're counting up, counting down from the top, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines down from the top. According to Rav Shita, if a person makes a t'nai in the Mechira, that there should be no claim of Onoah, then that t'nai is batel, it's not valid, and Rav holds that everybody agrees to that. Meisvei, we have a kashon rav from a brisa, hanosei vehanosein beamona vehaomer lechavero almenas she'ein lecha olai ono ein lo olav ono. There are two cases which the brisa records where there's no ono. The first case is amona. Amona means a person, a bal bayis, gives merchandise to someone that he's hiring, and that person is selling the items, the merchandise, and at the end of all the sales, which is going to take place over the course of time, he will give the most, the person who sells, will give the most to the Baal Bayis. The Baal Bayis is relying on this person, totally. Number one, in terms of the sales, in terms of returning the money at the end of the deals, and then he'll pay him a salary for that. We'll see exactly how much he pays him. And in this case, there's no way that the Baal Bayis could claim, listen, you could have sold it at a higher price. I'm not satisfied with the price that you got, that you received. Why? Because in this case, the amana means that he had total trust and he relied without hesitation on this socher, on this middleman, who's going to sell the merchandise at whatever price he sees fit. And in addition, the second case where there's no onah is a person who sells something and he says to the buyer, almanas, with the condition that you will not claim onah. And in these two cases, there's no onah. And therefore, we don't understand how Rav can justify the psak, the ruling of this brisa. Now, in terms of a no save and no same ba'amana, we just want to add one other point over here, that the Baal Bayis, again, cannot claim that the schara was worth more than the sum that he, the seller, got, you know, was able to rake in, because he relies on him. And also we want to add that if the, let's say the seller, on behalf of the Baal Bayis, was able to procure higher than above market price value and sales, it doesn't mean that therefore the seller, again the seller who's hired by the Baal Bayis, can therefore pocket that surplus money. He is relied upon to give and deliver all the monies that he received through these sales to the Baal Bayis, without skimming off anything for himself. So again, whether or not it's the mocher who's relying on the total credibility whether it's the Baal Bayis who's relying on total reliance upon the seller, and also in the flip case where the seller himself is going to be totally honest, and if he gets, as we said, a higher price, he's going to deliver all those funds to the Baal Bayis. That's called amona, and there's a trust over here. Now, he writes that legabi amocher o akone almenas shelotia chavero tvia shel onaso. In the case of a seller or a buyer who makes the condition that I'm going into this transaction with the knowledge that you will not claim onah, that condition is valid. Is the Gemara asks, L'Rav D'Omer Anah D'Amri Afilu L'Rav Yehuda, and this is what we covered in the last Shia, that even though Rav Yehuda, in the case of Kiddushin, validates the Tanai of Ein Loch Alai Sher Ksus V'Ona, however, that's because the Isha knew exactly what she was giving up on. And that's a valid bechil, but Rabbi Yehuda would agree in the case of onah, where the, let's say, the buyer doesn't know whether or not this is overcharge or not, his mechila, we compared, if you remember, to a kind of asmachta, he doesn't have a full das of mechila. And therefore, Rav insists that even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that in the case of Almanah she'en lo chalai onah, that tnai is completely null and void, and there will be onah. Is therefore Hamani. Who is the author of this brisa? The brisa says that this tnai of Almanah she'en lo chalai onah is a valid tnai. It can't be Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir holds explicitly that the tnai is batel in this case. And according to Rav, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that in this case of Almanah she'en lo chalai onah, there's no tnai, no valid tnai. Omar Abayi says that we're hard pressed here and we have no choice. Machvarta Rav Omar ki Rabbi Meir Shmuel Omar ki Rabbi Yehuda. Rav is going to have to admit that Eino Chinami, the machlokus between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, is indeed this machlokus about Ein Lecha Alai Onah, which means that Rav is standing on the shoulders of Rabbi Meir. The brisa that we just asked from that validates the Tanai is reflective of the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. And Rav is really Kitanoi. Rav really is entering into a Machlokas Tanoim here. And then according to Rav Shita, the Shmuel who validates the Tanai is standing on the shoulders of Rabbi Yehuda. Now, Shmuel himself, if you recall, argued that even Rabbi Meir would agree with him in the case of Onah, because there's no Vadai Akira. In other words, Rabbi Meir's issue in the case of Kiddushin, according to Shmuel, was because it is a Vadai Akira, and that's called Masal Mashikosu B'Torah. In the case of a Suffolk Akira, because at the time tonight we don't know if this Mekach has an Onah to it, doesn't have Onah to it, it's not an explicit, absolute contradiction to the law of the Torah, and therefore the Tanai is valid. So that Shmuel works it out, Bein l'Rabbi Meir, Bein l'Rabbi Yehuda. So when you read these words, Ushmuel di Amri ki Rabbi Yehuda, it would seem that that's the way Rav would interpret this brisa. And meaning once Rav is forced to say that I, Rav, hold like Rabbi Meir, then Shmuel, ipso facto, is accepting the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. However, if you look in the Ritva seems to assume that Abaye, in this case, is relying on what we saw in the name of Rav Hanan earlier in this daf to explain Shmuel, that there's a difference between Almanah she'en lecha onah and Almanah she'en bo onah, which means that if the Tanai was Ein Bo Onah, and it turns out that there was Onah, then that's going to be an invalid Tanai. Because basically there's Sheker here. If he says, Almanah she'en lecha alai, that you won't claim Onah, then there's room for arguing for Mechila. And according to the Ramban and the Ritva that we discussed the other day, according to Rav Hanan, When we get to the words of Shmuel, the interpretation of Shmuel, is in the understanding of Shmuel of Rabbi Yehuda, and the reason why the Gemara said Hacha miyemar de'akar, right? That Shmuel said that even Rabbi Meir would agree that miyemar de'akar. If the logic here is because there's no Vadi Akira, so that when the Torah says that you have to have, there must be a possibility of a claim of Onah, so if he makes a Tanai Almanas She'en Bo Onah, then one might argue that there's no Vadi Akira's Dovrman Torah in the case of Almanas She'en Bo Onah. And therefore, the Tanai should be valid. In other words, it's not clear that the din of the Torah would be batal here in this case. And therefore, the Svara of Shmuel is like Rabbi Meir, that you cannot make such a Tanai al Masha Kosova Torah. And when Abai says here, Machvarta, what it means is that from the words of Rabbanan and the Kusha from the Braisa, we prove that Rav holds like Rabbi Meir, And Shmuel holds like Rabbi Yehuda. So that's the approach of the Ritva. In any event, Rava says Lo Kasha, that this price is not a problem on Rav. Kan, the case of Rav, is Bistam. He says, Almanasha ain't lecha alai ona. And the other person doesn't know if there is ona, if there's not an ona, and therefore he's not mochel. And that's why Rav says that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, such a tanai is batal. But Kan, here in the Braisa, b'mefarish. The one who sold it said explicitly, this has ona. I'm selling you something that's worth on the market 100, and I'm selling you for 200. And therefore the buyer knows very well that there is ona, and yet he accepts the deal. In that case, Rabbi Yehuda holds that he's mochel on his ona. And therefore, that's not a cash on Rav. Rav is saying that the mechil on the ona is invalid because he doesn't know whether there's ona. But in this case, says Rav, we're talking about a case where it's obvious and it was spelled out explicitly that there is ona. And therefore, once there's a knowledge on both parts that there's ona, then there's mechila. And therefore, it's very similar to the case of Amanash Einlach Alai Sherksus Viona, where the Tanai is Kayam. And the reason for that is because she knows exactly what she has to be Mochelis on. It's a little bit unclear to me how Rabbi Meir is going to hold now in this context. In other words, maybe because his Tanai is being Oker the Din Torah, but you wonder why, if we're operating within the context of Mechila, that's not Nakir's Din Torah. In any event, Rava wants to prove that his approach to differentiate between Stam and Mefaresh is explicit in the Braisa. The Sanya, we have a Braisa that says, when do we say that there's Ona and any Tanai is completely invalid? That's Bistam. If he just says, Almanasha ein lecha alai Ona. And this would support Rav. Aval b'mefaresh, if he explicitly tells him about the ona, mocher sha'amar lokeach, hefet zeh sh'ani mocher lecha b'masayim, yodeh ani bo she'enu shavel mona. I'm telling you up front that I'm selling you this for 200 with the knowledge that it's worth on the market 100. And then he adds, al menashe ein lecha alai ona, but you will not claim ona. Is ain lo o love o no. So the Bryce is outspoken that we're talking about a case of Mefaresh. Only in Mefaresh, when he explicitly tells him about the Ono, then there's Mechila and the Tanai is Chai V'Kayim. V'chein, the Bryce continues, Lokeach Shomber L'mocher Chayfet Zesh Ani Lokeach Mimcha V'mona. In the case where there's an Ono on the Mocher is Nisana, and Lokeach says, I know very well that what I'm paying you is not the true market value. It's worth 200, but I'm only going to pay you 100. And almanas she'ein lecha alai ona, I'm only willing to pay you this sum of 100 if you, the mocher, agree that there won't be ona. Is ein lo olav ona, because since it's the case of mefaresh, therefore the mocher is mocher and he accepted that condition. Almanas keni sold. He sold the object. He sold the item. If you take a look in Tosus, Divra Maskel Bameh, Tosus says, I don't understand, according to Rava, the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel is in a case of Stam, where the Mocher, the Loket, did not explicitly say that there's Ona in this Mekach. And therefore Rav holds the Tanai is Batel, Shmuel holds the Tanai is Kayim. The Braisa, which Rav is quoting now, begins by saying that in the case of Stam, the Tanai is Batel. So what's Shmuel going to do according to Rav with this Braisa? So Rava is doing a great job in defending Rav and setting up that chiluk in Rav's frame of reference between a Stam and a Mefaresh. But now we have a difficulty with Shmuel Shita, because according to Shmuel, how are we going to understand this Braisa? And in that context, it may be preferable to accept Abaye, that the Machlokes Shin Rav and Shmuel is identical with the Machlokes Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore any Braisa that we find will either reflect the Shita of Rav or the Shita of the Shita of Rav Meir or the Shita of Rav Yehuda. So Tosfos says that Shmuel is going to explain this price in a different way, that the Stam here in this Reisha, that's where he said nothing. It was just a regular Mechira, and at the time of the sale, the seller said nothing to the buyer. In this case, the Mekach is Batel. Mefaresh is a case where he says, Hamanas She'en Lecha Olai Ono, which according to Shmuel is a valid Tanai. Now, getting back to the case of Noseiv and Nosein Ba'amona that we mentioned earlier, there are two categories of an arrangement between the Baal Bayis and the Mocher. One is called Amona, and the other is called Shaveh. What's the difference between Amona and Shaveh? In the case of Amona, the Mocher, who's receiving the Schora from the Baal Bayis, is going to sell the merchandise Ma'at Ma'at, a little bit at a time in the stores. And as we said before, the Baal Bayis believes him and trusts him that he'll sell it at the best price he can get, and the most that he receives for sale will be delivered over to the Baalim at the end of the Mechira. And at that point, the Mocher would be paid a salary for his services. Shava is something different. Shava is where the Baal Bayis sells the Mocher all of his merchandise up front based on the Shava, meaning the market price, which is basically like a lower kind of price. The Mocher now buys this entire volume of merchandise and pays for it up front, and he's hoping that he's going to sell it at a higher price and he'll pocket that profit. Tanu Rabbanan, the Braisa adds that Hanosein Vanosein Ba'amona Hareza Lo Yechashev Es Hara Ba'amona Vesayofa B'Shova. There's an arrangement which is a sort of double relationship, a double arrangement, meaning it's both Amona and Shava at the same time. I'll explain how that operates. And the Braisa is prohibiting such a relationship, meaning it's got to be either Amona or it's got to be Shava, but never the overlap. What would be the integration of both Amona and Shava, which is prohibited? That would be a case where the Baal Bayis says to the Mocher, take two, categories of merchandise, let's separate it into two, and you know what? I'm going to pay you for the lower... Now, let's point out that the merchandise falls into two classifications. One is higher quality, which, it's very easy to find a buyer for that. The buyers jump on that. And one is lower qualities, and it's much more difficult to find a buyer. So let's say the Baal Bayis wants to make the following arrangement with these two different qualities of merchandise. And he says to the higher quality of schayra, he says, so it's easy to sell it immediately. And the second rate, sug bet quality is going to be sold over a long period of time. And he says the following arrangement. He says, you know what? I'm going to sell the higher quality merchandise to the buyer, to the Mocher, the seller, I'll call him. So there's Baal Bayis and the Mocher. And I'm going to sell it to him for the market price now. In other words, if he sells it immediately because it's such good quality, he'll be able to collect the money immediately. He'll be able to sell it immediately. But, you know what? You sell it, Mr. Mocher, and hold on to the money. And for the second quality, lower quality, then you, the Mocher, whatever you're able to sell it, the best you can do, you do it. Now, what happens is that the Baal Bayis is not collecting the monies from the sale of this Baal Bayis until such time that both volumes, both categories of Schera are sold. So, in a sense, the Mocher has the money, which he eventually will have to give back to the Baal Bayis, but he's holding on to it for a long period of time, and he can invest that money. He could use it as if it was his in the meantime. So in other words, what the agreement is, that the Baal Bayis says to the Mocher, instead of paying you for your services, and I would normally have to pay you for that because you're selling, you know, the second rate, you know, a sug bet, I'm not going to pay you for that. Why? Because I'm going to allow you to use the monies from the superior quality, that sug aleph, over the course of a period of time. And as Rashi points out over here, this is a problem of ribis. Because basically what the Baal Bayis is saying, that in lieu of the fact that you the Mocher, will be able to hold on to the monies, and you'll have monies almost immediately from the Suga Aleph, I will exempt myself from paying you all the fees that I would normally pay you for selling Sug Bet. And that you're not allowed to do, the Bryce says, because that's Nira Kiribis. Take a look at Rashi, Dibra Maskal HaRezeh. Rashi says, Havi Ribis. But the Mefarshim already explained that it's Mechzeik Ribis. It's not technically Ribis, but it does look like Ribis, because instead of paying the Mocher for his services, his fee, the Baal Bayis is allowing the Mocher to make a quick turnover on the good quality merchandise and hold on to that money. And the use of that money is worth the fees that normally the Mocher would be collecting from the Baal Bayis. Ela, but rather, says the Braisa, Ozeh v'zeh b'amona, Ozeh v'zeh b'shaveh. You can't overlap. Either you do it b'amona, and what that means is that the Mocher is going to sell the merchandise of the Baal Bayis over the course of time piecemeal, and the Baal Bayis will get the monies at the end, but he'll add the fee. Or b'shaveh, that the Mocher has paid up the Baal Bayis immediately based on market price, and this Mocher is going to sell the Schorah over the course of time at a higher price. Now the Braisa is going to add other dinim with regard to Nosei v'Nosein be'amon. And the Braisa says the following. When, let's say, for example, in Nosei v'Nosein be'amon, we said that the Baal Bayis is going to have to pay the Mocher a fee. What kind of a fee does he pay? No sein lo schar katef, or katof, schar gamal, schar fundok. And then, schar atzmo eno notil shekvar nosen lo schar misholim. So there's a list here of four ingredients. The first ingredient is katof. This means transportation, right? There are costs to take the schara and pay a poel to transport them to the marketplace where they could be sold. Those are monies which the mocher is going to shell out from his pocket, or lay out from his pocket, and the mocher is going to have to reimburse him for that. Not only that, number two, this schar gamal. You only have to pay for the rental of camels to transport. So there's the poel who's going to transport, and there's the rental fees for the gemalim. Then there's something called schar pundok, which means that the mocher is going to have to, pay, for storage space. He himself may have to rent a place overnight until he can wake up early the next morning and get to the market. Now then there's something called schar tircha, which is called schar atzma. What about the fee for the service itself? Is that the price, surprisingly, says eino notel, that he doesn't collect? And why is that? Shekvar nosan lo schar mishalim, because the Baal Bayis has already paid that fee. So the Gemara immediately asks, what does the price have in mind? Schar mishalim mehecha kayoivle. He hasn't paid him a dime. What do you mean that the fee has already been collected? Amar Rav Papa b'tzadruye d'yave arba l'meya. The agreement was made. That was apparently the accepted custom, that, for example, in the case of Tzadruye, and then it can apply to other cases of similar sort, which are begadim made of canvas, made of hemp, H-E-M-P, some sort of a flax kind of substance. And the deal is that for every 100 garments that the mocher sells, he gets on behalf of the Baal Bayis, he gets 4 to 100. He gets a 4% fee. So basically, the monies that the mocher is going to deliver at the end, after all the sales were complete, to the Baal Bayis, are subtracted from that fee is that 4% profit. So again, even though the money was never actually given from the mocher, from the Baal Bayis to the mocher, but nevertheless the mocher collected that in terms of the schor itself. So it means that the mocher, who's sort of like the agent on behalf of the Baal Bayis, is not going to actually be paid by the Baal Bayis out of pocket as a fee, but rather, with regard to the merchandise that he's selling, he's going to take off 4% for himself and only sell 96%. So he's already been paid up by the Baal Bayis, or the if you want to call him the consigner who agreed to this arrangement. Now, in introduction to the next Mishnah here on the bottom of Nun Aleph Amid Beis, let me just give you this chart in terms of the value of coins. And some of this we've seen in the past. The highest value coin that we're going to talk about is a selah, which is the equivalent of 2 shkolim. 2 shkolim make up a selah. And we're going to see that this selah is made of silver, and its value, to a large extent, is reflected by the weight in silver as a rare coin. And if the selah gets worn down over the course of time, or maybe got damaged, and now its silver value is no longer that of 2 shkolim, maybe it's worth 1 shekel, then that selah is a little bit dangerous in a sense, because if you use it on the market, you might be fooling someone, and somebody might be tricked into thinking that it's worth a full selah when it's only worth a shekel. It's only got 50% of its value. But in any event, the selah is equal to 2 shkolim. The shekel itself is equal to 2 dinrim. So the 4 dinrim in a selah, the 2 shkolim in a selah, 2 dinrim to a shekel. The dinar itself has 6 mos. The mo itself is 2 fidyonim. And the fudjon is 2 isars. So again, it's kedai to write this down and keep it on a page and see if it'll help us as we go along. The Mishnah is going to record now 3 opinions with regard to the following issue. And that's ona, where one of the parties was cheated, whether it's the mocher or the lokeach, because of the worn down coin which was given. Let's say, for example, the lokeach had to pay a selah, in this particular case, for the merchandise, and the selah, that coin that he actually delivered in payment to the Baal Bayis, unbeknown to the Baal Bayis, was already worn down, and it wasn't worth 2 shkolim. So the Mishnah is going to record 3 opinions amongst the Tanoim as to at what point is this ona. Like, for example, if the difference between the selah when it sells for its full value and the selah after it's worn down is 1 isar, it's a very small fraction. Let's say, the dollar is worth 99 cents, that's not a basis for a claim of onah. If on the other hand, the seller goes down to be worth a shekel, which is half of its value, then that for sure is onah. That's outright cheating. But obviously, between the two extremes, there are many different fractions. And that's what the Mishnah is going to talk about. So the Mishnah says the following: Kama tehe hasela chasera. At what point has the seller been worn down enough that lo yeheba ona? Meaning, even though it's been worn down, it didn't get to the point at which it was totally worn down, you know, 50% worn down, it still has a certain percentage of chasera, and in the language of the Mishnah, meaning we call it in Hebrew shchika, it was worn down, but nevertheless, it's still not ono. And if that be the case, then the percentage that we're going to give now, in the name of Rabbi Meir, is applicable to all types of coins, not just to Selah. Selah is just an example. And Rabbi Meir Omer, Arba Isoros of a Selah. So again, we're talking about a Selah, and the Chisoron now, the devaluation as a result of the Shechika, was 4 Isoros. Now we have to know that there are 96 Isorim in a Selah, which basically is the calculation of 2 times 2 times 6 times 2 times 2, and you get up to 96. So there are 96 Isorim in a Selah, and if the devaluation of the Selah, in this case was the equivalent of 4 Isoros, that would be a ratio of 4 over 96, and if my math is correct, that's the same as 1 over 24. Correct? That 4 times 24 is 96. So that percentage of 1 over 24, which is very close to 4%, obviously, is still within reason. That's still reasonable. And the Selah is still fully in use. The Mocher can, the Loker could use that Selah to pay the Mocher without any claim of Ono, because the depreciation was so minute and so, shall we say, insignificant. Now you might ask a question here. We've always been discussing the Shear of Ono as a Shtus, as 1 over 6. So we're going to see that not only Rabbi Meir in this case, but even Rabbi Yehuda, let's just read Rabbi Yehuda, we're not dealing with 1 over 6. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, there's no Ono in a Selah until we get to the point of Arba Fundionos of a Selah. Now, the Fundion is worth 2 Isrim, so we're doubling it. And instead of a fraction of 1 over 24, we're talking about a fraction of 1 over 12. Because there are 4 Fundionos. If that was the Chisoron, that's how much the Shechika took away, was 4 Fundionos. We're talking about the 48 Fundionim in a Selah, so that's 4 over 48, which is the equivalent of 1 over 12. But again, I emphasize that whether you take Rabbi Meir's 1 over 24, or even Rabbi Yehuda's 1 over 20, 1 over 12, you're still left with a fraction that's much, much smaller than the 1 over 6. Rav Shimon is the one who's gonna come up with 1 over 6 as the third sheet, but what do we do with Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda? And the answer is that the dinim of ono in general, and the dinim of ono with regard to matbeos, are, according to these two shittas in the Mishnah, two different dinim. And matbea gets a special category. People are very makbid on a matbea. They want to know that this matbea is worth what it says on it. You know, if it says it's worth a selah, it should be worth a selah. If it says it's worth, you know, a shekel, it should be worth a shekel. And therefore, people are makpid. In fact, in certain places, people, the market conditions are such that people are makpid to weigh the coins. And according to some Rishonim, this might be reflected even in the Rambam, if they weigh the coins and they find that it's a little bit less, even a small fraction of the weight of a selah, for example, that's cause for ono. But assuming we're in a place where they don't actually weigh the coins, nevertheless, we're talking about the Shechika which devaluates the coins. And people are very makpid. And therefore, this extra kpeda here engenders a higher standard of honesty, if you will, and lowers the ratio of ona. Okay, now we get to Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon Omer, it's only ona and a selah. And here we're turning to Daf Nun Beis Amud Aleph. If it's Shmona Fudyonos, it's got to be 8 Fudyonos out of the 48 that make a Vesela. And again, we're doubling the fraction here from 1 over 12 to 2 over 12, which is the same as 1 over 6, Shnei Pidyonim L'dinar. And there are 12 Pudyonim in a dinar. And how do I get that? Because there are, you know, a ma is made up of 2 Pudyonim, and a dinar is made up of 6 mos. So if you multiply 6 times 2, there are 12 Pudyonim in a ma. And if that be the case, what we're talking about is a ratio of 1 over 6. The comfortable part of Rabbi Shimon is that he's equating the kpeda and the level of fraud and onah of general universal products and items to that of matbea. There's no difference between matbea, which is a 6, the shtus, and all other objects. So Mitzvah Hashem will get into this machlokes a little bit later. Ad masai mutar lahachzir. Now we had in the case of shar chafotzim, other than matbea, back in the previous Mishnah, that we give the nis'ana a certain limited amount of time. Let's say he takes the item and he wants to see its true value, he takes it into some sort of a baki, an expert. What about in the case of matbea? Who are the experts? So the expert is the shulchani. The shulchani is the money changer. There's also a chenvani who's a store owner. He also is a bit of an expert on coins and weighing coins and seeing the level of shchika. So what we're going to do is we're going to give the nis'ana enough time to go to the shulchani and show it to the shulchani. And again, in that case, it's very parallel to what we saw in general ona of kidei tagar, to take it to the tagar. Here we're going to, but the Mishnah makes a limitation, a stipulation. It's got to be in the krochim, because in the smaller towns they didn't have a shulchani, they didn't have a money changer. Not every little darf, a little shtetl would have its own money changer. But the big cities, that's where you went in to change money. So give him enough time within the big cities to go to the shulchani. What do you do if he's in the kfar? And the Mishnah sets up a different time, for a different standard of time, ad Arve Shabbos. So if the sale was on a Sunday, we'll give him until Friday. Because Friday is when we can assume he takes his money and he buys whatever he needs for Shabbos. He'll show it to the storekeeper, these coins. And the shopkeeper will decide whether he wants to receive these coins. If they're so worn down and he says, sorry buddy, I'm not accepting these coins, then he knows that he was cheated and there's an onah here. But basically what the Mishnah is saying is that whether the sale takes place in a krach and the nis'ana waited until after Kadesh Yir al-Shulchani, or it took place in a kfar and the nis'ana took his time and it was already after Shabbos, from then on we assume mechila and there's no valid legitimate claim of onah. Then the Mishnah says, im hoya makira. Okay, now this part of the Mishnah is a little bit complicated. The language of the Mishnah is very terse. I'm going to give you what I think is the final conclusion, which maybe I shouldn't do, the way the Gemara finally, beats this out, is that, let's say, makira, again, it could always be the mocher lokeach, but let's say the lokeach gave mos to the mocher, and the lokeach, unfortunately, although he was cheated, I'm sorry, the mocher who received these mos, although he was cheated, he did not do what he had to do, his due diligence, and run to the shulchani in the case of a krach, and then immediately, run back to the lokech and say, look, these are the mos you gave me. But in any event, the time passed, the mocher, the mocher knows that these, so let's get the following case. Makira means that he recognizes these coins. What that means is that, let's say he received coins, this mocher, but he's selling things to other people as well. He's got to be makira, he has to know and identify that this is the coin that was given to him by Ploni Almoni, by such a lokeach. He has to be able to identify it. Now, he comes back to Ploni Almoni, the buyer, and he says to him, look, buddy, this is the coin you gave me. You know, I put it in a special bag and it has your name on it. And I was cheated by you. You know, you underpaid me because this coin is seriously damaged. So the Mishnah says that afilu achar shneimasar chodesh mekabla himena, and this is, as the Gemara is going to explain in Amid Beis, mi midas chasidus. Again, the time period passed and the mocher didn't do his due diligence. He comes 12 months later to Lokech. He says, here's the coin you gave me, hakir na, and guess what? It's been depreciated by virtue of the shechika, and I want to return it to you. Is mekable mena, the Lokech should be very good about it, very magnanimous about it, and accept it, mimidas chasidus. And then it says in the Mishnah, Ein lo alav el taromas. If the Lokech says, look, buddy, the law is the law, I don't have to accept this back. You didn't come to claim onah within the time period that you allowed. The termination period passed, the deadline passed. Is then Ein lo alav el taromas. The best that the mocha could have, you know, the grudge he could hold against the Lokech for not willing to go beyond the letter of the law, midas chasidus, and replace these mos, is called taromas, like an erev Yom Kippur halacha. You know, you have to get mechila because there's a little bit of a grudge, and I'm holding a grudge against you for not taking back these mos. But it's not a real tviya. It's not a momentistic tviya because, according to the strict letter of the law, once this period of time is kadesh yiru l'shulchani passed, that's it for fal, and the mocher has passed his deadline. The last part of the Mishnah is even more complicated. The way to read the Mishnah. Nosna l'maser sheni. It seems that what's going on here in this last piece in the Mishnah is that even though the matbea we said was chasera, meaning it's shachuk, it's been devaluated, and maybe even if it reached the shiro no, which is either 1 over 24, 1 over 12, 1 over 6, is nevertheless it can be used for chilul peros maser sheni because it still has a tsura on it. Again, the metal is much lighter and then it's not as weighty as it should be. V'eino choshesh. Again, if the tzura was completely wiped off, if you remember we discussed the pasuk v'tzarta kesef yadech, it's got to be a kesef shesh bat tzura. But assuming it does have tzura and you want to know whether it has the Torah asmat be'ah or not, then since it still is, I guess, legal tender, again, that's what we're going to have to see in the sugya, is eino ela nefesh ra, which means that if somebody refuses to take this matbea, he's called a nefesh ra. Obviously, it means he did the wrong thing. He should have been willing to accept this matbea. Now, again, if it's a shir of onah, then you wonder, A, why we're blaming someone, faulting someone for not accepting something which is onah. Maybe what he should have done is, he should have said, well, you know what, make up the difference because it's not worth what you have to pay me or what you should have paid me. But, and also, for example, in the case of Chilul Peros Maaser Sheni, assuming that the matbea has to be equivalent in value to the market value of the peros, now the matbea doesn't have that value. It's been devaluated by a shear of onah. So maybe what we're going to have to generate here is a framework in which we have two values. You know, you have, let's say a sela was devaluated to a shekel. I mean, that's an extreme case. Then on the one hand, it's worth a sela, but on the other hand, it's really worth a shekel. And when the Mishnah accepts and validates a chil peros maaser sheni, you're going to have to assume that the peros are worth a shekel and not a sela, because this sela is not really worth a sela. Okay, now we get to the Gemara itself. The Gemara is going to be medayik in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, kamate asela chasera veloye ba'ona. So it means if you get to that percentage, there is no onah. And the Brice or Rimini, the Gemara asks the steer from a Brice, had kamatiya selach asera v'yeh ba'onah. So the question is, once you hit that, you know, the bell rings, you know, you hit that that mark of a 12th or whatever the percentage is that onah? Is it up to that point? It's still not onah. So what's the deal? What's the status of a coin that is exactly that shear? We'll call it 1/12 using Rabbi Yehuda's shita. And that seems to be a theory, because the Mishnah is saying, Kamati Asel Chaser Veloya Bona, and Rabbi Yehuda's Arba Fudyonos is going to be a value which is not considered Ono, a percentage which is not Ono. But if you look in the Brisa says, Ad Kamati Asel Chaser Veloya Bona. It all depends whether you're counting from up to down or down to up. Tana didan, our Mishnah is kachashiv mimata lemala. It's going down from a smaller percentage all the way to the top percentage, and it's establishing that it's not. That's why the Mishnah says it's not onah until it hits a certain high percentage. But Tana Bra, the Tana the Braisa, Kachashim Milamal Lamata, he's starting from a major chisar, let's say 50% of the seller went down. And then he says, up until which point would the seller, you know, be considered, at what point would the seller be considered chasera, and at what point it would be onah. So that there's no stira here between the Mishnah and the Braisa. Let me just try to, you know, summarize the Shaka Vitaria here as best as I could. In the case of the Mishnah, you get the impression that if the Matbea experienced the Shechika, you know, we call it erosion, if you will, exactly the amounts, the percentages, the fractions listed in the Mishnah would still be valid. According to the Brisa, you get the impression that at a certain point when the erosion makes it so chaser, so missing, that there will be onah. And therefore the difference is going to be what happens exactly at that percentage. And the Gemara's answer to reconcile this is that if you're going mimata lamala, which means there's more and more erosion, you're starting with a minimal erosion and getting to a more profound erosion that's literally from the bottom all the way to the top. And the Mishnah basically asks, what is the maximum amount of erosion that it still can be accepted? And basically the Mishnah is telling you that as long as the erosion is less than a certain percentage, it's not onah. And the Brice on the other end is starting from the opposite end. And it's kachoshiv milamala lamata. So you're starting with a more profound erosion level, and it's going down and down and down until finally you hit that percentage, and at that percentage you already say this is the maximum amount of erosion I shouldn't call it the maximum amount of erosion. Let's see if I can formulate that a little bit better. If there's this radical, in the Bryce's context, if there's this very serious, significant amount of erosion, let's say, if we talk in terms of Isrim, right, so it's got an erosion of 6 Isrim, or even 5 Isrim, or even 4 Isrim, it still is considered onah. But basically, the bottom line is that both the Mishnah and the Bryce agree that at that percentage point of erosion, the coin is invalid, and there is onah. Amar Rava. First, the Gemara is going to ask a question here. Maishna besela de pligi, maishna betalis de lo pligi. This was the question that we had raised. Why is there a discrepancy, according to 2 out of 3 of the Tanoim, between a classical case, which the Gemara calls talis, which is any merchandise, as opposed to coins? Amar Rava, man Tana, who is the Tana that mentions, that that reflects in general Ono and Talis 1:6, that's Rabbi Shimoni. So it comes out that according to Rava, the fraction of Rabbi Meir is 1 over 24, or Rabbi Yehuda 1 over 12, is relevant not just to the case of Matbeos, but also to the case of Talis. And what we've learned until now, says Rava, and the premise that we've been operating with, that the shear of Onoah in general is a shtus, that's all reflected, that's attributed to Reb Shimon. And the other Tanoim would disagree. Abai Omar, Abai wants to say that the mission of Talis and all merchandise reflects everybody's shita. And it means that the shear of shtus as a general shear is universally accepted. That's because talis is ad shtus machal idish. If the overcharging or underpaying was up to less than a shtus, up to but less than a shtus, then there's mechila. But in the case of matbea, there's no mechila at that shtus, according to those two tanoim, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Why? The Amri Inchi. Now, I don't think the Gemara is basing this halachic reasoning on, you know, some sort of idiomatic phrase that people use. But I think the idiomatic phrase is indicative of really what is the reality. That's why people use this phrase. What do they say? The Amri Inchi, people say, Ashik Ligabach Vishave Lichresach. So the gabach is something that you wear on your body. That's a garment. Gabach means it covers your body. That's the word gabach. Kreisech, which means your belly, is a reference to food. And what people say is that if you need to buy a talis, you need to buy gabach, something to cover your body, and that's what you need, you know, it's cold in the winter and you're freezing, pay whatever you have to pay. And don't worry about onah. But if you're talking about food for your belly, then that's something you go to your local supermarket and you pay the basic price. You pay the market price. There's no reason for you to have to expend yourself and spend all the money in the world because he wants to overcharge you for, I don't know, he calls it an Italian pear or something. I don't know what. But as far as Selah is concerned, Keva delo sagi lelo mochil. Sagili means he needs these coins for schora. In other words, what do you do with coins, right? It's not something that you use to wipe, you know, to protect your body and warm your body or to eat. You use it for buying and selling. That's its only use. And if this coin is not acceptable, it's, you know, people are saying, hey, I don't want to take this coin because it's corroded, then that's called onah. And whether it's Rabbi Meir Shita Onah or Rabbi Yehuda Shita Onah, that's acceptable. Whereas Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, with the 1/12th and the 1/24th, they would agree that as a universal rule, which is represented here by the word talis, or in the case of gabach, there it's a shtus. And less than a shtus, people are on mochel. That's what comes out of this sugya. Now, I'm not going to paskin here, but I do think that although as general rule we side with Rav against Abai, the impression you get is that here Abai has the upper hand. I don't think it's Nayeh Lamaisa, so we're not going to add to Yal Kagam, but there's a certain appealing logic to Abai's approach. And the word ashik here means to be willing to suffer an oshek. That's the way I understand it. An oshek means some sort of overpaying. And when it says shavi means pay what it's worth. And just to summarize, it comes out that Rav Meir, for example, would say that in general, although with regard to mos, even if the shchika and the devaluation is 1 over 24, that's onah. In the case of other merchandise that was purchased, it would be 1 over 6, even according to Rav Meir. Gufa. Now let's go back to the Braisa itself. Ad kama tehei hasela chasera v'yeheba ona v'mer omer abba isaros isa ledina. Rabbi Yehuda omer abba pidyonos pidyon ledina. Rabbi Shimon omer shmona pidyonos shnei pudyon ledinar. Says the Braisa, yeser al kain. Let's assume that the chisaron, the shchiko, the erosion has been more profound, but yet it didn't reach the level of the shir ona. Is mochra bishavya? So again, we're talking about a case now where there was an erosion of the coin, but it hasn't yet reached that point where the erosion is so profound that it's 1/24 coin to a mayor, etc., etc. In such a case, the Braisa tells us that if it's less than the shir onah, then it's worth its original value. Meaning, even though this selah has gone down by a percentage point or 2 percentage points, it's still called a selah, and it could be used, and according to the halacha, as a selah. However, the Braisa continues, ad kama tipoches v'yehei rashoi l'kaima. Let's assume that the erosion of the metal was so significant that at some point, according to the Braisa, he's not allowed to even hold on to it. It's a dangerous object, because somebody might be fooled and cheated into thinking that it's really a sella. And the Braisa establishes the following ratio, besella ad shekel. As we said before, a sella is worth 2 shekels. You're allowed to hold on to it up until the point in which it's, as long as it's worth at least 50% of its value, that's 1 shekel. And you might ask, well, isn't somebody going to be cheated by it? The answer is, it's such a profound difference here, right? In terms of the weight, anybody can tell this doesn't weigh a sella, and nobody's going to be cheated by it. But let's say it becomes even more than 50%, meaning its value is less than a shekel, then you're not allowed to use it. Why? Because at that point, somebody might mistake it for a shekel. And that itself would be misleading. Now, the question I have to ask here is, if the selah, let's say a selah is a very wide coin, and after the shchika, it goes down to less than the shear of a shekel, so then why is it that nobody notices this, and therefore you might cheat someone? So if you look at Rashi, Dima Maskil Besela, Rashi seems to indicate that selah tavua upoches v'olex ad shekel mutal l'kaim v'deina osu l'ramos v'bnei ono l'mokro b'selah yofa l'fif v'shkash lo nikar avol mishe piches mishekel lo yikaimenu l'fi shebo l'ramos u'l'mokro b'tora shekel. What's going to happen is that the public, you know, whoever you're dealing with, is going to mistakenly define it as a shekel. Now, in a case of a shekel, Rashi says, "Ein pchashelo nikar legabi shekel." Why is that? Mitokshu rochav shebetchilo haya sela eino nirech chaser mishekel. So, in other words, since it was originally very wide as a sela, now after the shchika, people don't realize that it's worth less than a shekel. A shekel is a half of a selah. The way I understand Rashi, again, Rashi puts the emphasis on the fact that the selah has a wide diameter. Okay? Right? And if it was eroded, and let's get to the point where it's less than a shekel's weight, it's a very, very thin coin, but it still is wider. And that confuses the person, because since it's wide, you know, it's got a large diameter, people might mistakenly think that in terms of its weight, although they realize that it became thinner, it still has the weight of a shekel. And therefore they would think that it's still worth a shekel. Therefore, if the level of chasera of shechika in the sela was worth more than a shekel, you can, you know, people realize that it's much thinner and they could use it as a shekel. They really clearly see that it's not worth a sela. But once it erodes to the point where it's less than a shekel, that's more than 50%, then you might be able to illegitimately point it off as a shekel, and people can't tell that, you know, that it's really, really thinner and lighter than a shekel, because they're fooled by the fact that it has a wider diameter, because again, it was originally a sela, which is a wide diameter. Ubedinar, now this is a little confusing. It says ad rova. Now rova usually means a quarter of its value. And if we're talking about a dinar, all of a sudden it's worth one quarter of its original value, and it's still valid as a coin. That has to be understood. But then pachos mikan isar, if it dips below a shear of an isar, then asur. Okay, so this has to be understood. We'll wait to see what the Gemara says about this. So now, hareza loyim karena. The Brisa here is going to establish that when we've said that the pchas was significant enough that you're not allowed to hold on to it anymore, what it means is that even if you want to establish its value, its true value, then you're not allowed to sell it. Lo yim karena, lo letagar, v'lo lecharam, v'lo leharag, mipnei shemaramin bahem ba es ha'achirim. If you sell this eroded coin to any of the following people, a socher who's, you know, does business with this, or a charam is someone who's known to steal, he's a thief, or a harag, a person who's a murderer, these are people that you don't trust. And what they're going to do is they're going to take this matbea and they're going to pawn it off as if it was a complete matbea. In some cases, the recipient is so afraid to say anything, he'll just accept it as if it was a complete valid coin. So you don't want to keep this around. You know, it's like the Gemara says, you can't keep a shtar that's already parua around. You know, it's avlo beveisecha. Here too, we're not going to allow you to maintain possession over something, eliyik bena, but rather the best thing you should do with it is you should pierce it, v'yitlena betzavar beno, and let's make it into some sort of a necklace, or tzavar bito, for his daughter, for his son. And basically, again, we don't know why in the case of a dinar, it's a quarter of a dinar. And only if it's worth less than a quarter of its original value, then you got to get rid of it. That we have to get, you know, come to grips with. But in the case of a socher, we're afraid that he might actually pass off this coin as a good coin. Then we have these gazlonim. He translates this here as, what's the language? He says, Odama gozel momen acherim. That's based on Rashi, some sort of an extortioner. Then we talk about murderers. And their person, even if he realizes that this coin is not worth its value, but he's so afraid, he's so intimidated, he's going to accept the coin without rate. So therefore, get rid of this. You know, we don't want it hanging around. Make it into, instead of a coin, make it into a necklace. That's what you're allowed to do. Now later on, I'm going to see exactly where you pierce the coin, because if you pierce it on the outer, you know, on the outer circumference, you know, somebody might cut that point off, and you'll never even know it was pierced. But you got to pierce it right through the middle. It's Shem. We'll see that a little later. Omar Mar, the Braisa says, B'sela ad shekel, which is half its value, B'dina ad rova, Maishna b'sela ad shekel till half its value, Maishna b'dina ad rova, why down to a quarter? Omar Abai, my rova diktoni, let's reinterpret the word rova, Nami rova shekel. In other words, we're talking about a quarter of a shekel. Now let's go back to our chart over here. A shekel is worth 2 dinar. So then if you're talking about a dinar, which is worth 2 dinars to a shekel, then a quarter of a shekel is the same as half of a dinar. I mean, that seems to be simple math. So when he says rova shekel, what we're talking about is half a dinar. So again, it's down to the exact same half of its value, just like in the case of a sella, as shekel. Omar Rava, Deka Nami, here's one of those rare cases that Rava comes to support Abai, to applaud his position. The Katani, it's very meduyak in the Braisa, because it says in the Braisa, Rova. It doesn't say revia, which would mean one quarter, but a rova. Rova means the name of a coin. And in this case, what we're talking about is a rova shekel. That's what's called a rova shekel. Shma mino. And again, a rova shekel, to reiterate, is half of a dinar. Lovely, obviously, the dinar b'shekel. So now the Gemara asks, why did the Braisa have to talk about a dinar in terms of a shekel? You know, why couldn't it just say how much the dinar was devaluated and depreciated by virtue of its erosion? And the Gemara says, Milsag av urche kamash, wants to tell me something by and by, the ika dinar, the osi mishekel. That you could have a dinar that derives from a shekel. Again, a shekel equals 2 dinarim. Now, if the shekel erodes until it has the weight of 1 single dinar, Rashi says here that it is acceptable for use as a dinar. So it's only when the coin goes down in value until it's less than that of a dinar, and it's less than 50%, that's when you're enjoined from keeping it. And that's indicated by the Braisa referring to this eroded dinar in terms of a fraction of a shekel rather than a fraction of a dinar. And what the Braisa wants to tell you is that if you started with a shekel and eroded to that of a dinar, you're allowed to keep it. That's the Chiddush of this price. Now the Gemara goes on and says, "Misayel le Rabbi Ami." This is going to be a support text for Rabbi Ami. The Omer Rabbi Ami, dinar abo mishekel mutal lekaimo. So if you started with a shekel and it eroded to a dinar, then you're allowed to keep it and use it as a dinar. Because it's very clear and recognizable to everyone that it's no longer worth a shekel, but now it's only worth a dinar. However, dinar abo misela, right? In other words, if you started with a sela, which is the equivalent of 4 dinarim, and now it's worth only a dinar, and you might say, well, let's use this sela as a dinar. No, osu l'kaimo, you're not allowed to use that. And you're not allowed to even hold on to it. You got to make it into a necklace. Why? Because the sela is a wide diameter coin, my be'erachava, and even after it goes down in its value, and it's now one quarter, it's only worth a dinar, you could mistakenly think that it's worth a shekel, right? And you could be fooled, as we said before, by its wide diameter, so therefore get rid of it. Pachos mikan iser, we're quoting the Braisa again, asur maika omer. What does this mean? Pachos mikan Isar Asur. What is the meaning of this last expression of the Tana, the Braisa? We can't take it literally that only if the pchas of the sela of the dinar was more than 50% in the shear of Isar, then Asur l'kaimah. Because in the beginning of the Braisa we said that the shear is up to a shekel or up to rova, which we meant was half. Now, in Pachto, Afilu Bepruta Nosefes, also Lekaima. If it goes beyond the 50%, it dips down below that. You can't be. So, what's this ad? What is this Isar? Where does it come into this Pchas of in Isar? Where does it come into it? Because any Pchas, even a Pruto, that's the Mashu, would be enough if it dipped below the half, the 50%. Omar Abaye Hachi Komer. This is what the Tana has in mind. Pachasa Sela Yosef Mikdei Ona. Isar, Asur. Okay, let's try to take a stab at this. He says the following. Abai is saying that what the Bryce has in mind, we had a machlokes in the Bryce about what the Shiro Noinamat bears, with 1/6, 1/12, 1/24. In all these cases, if Pachasa Sela Yosef Mikdei Ona, Isar, if the shear of the Pachas of the Sela is Yosef Mikdei Ona, right, respectively, according to each Tana, it's more than a 12th, etc., greater than that. And how much is the Pachas when you go beyond the shear of Ona? That's an Isar's worth. Okay, so if you can determine that it dips below its value more than 1/24 or more than 1/12, 1/16, up and that pchas below that is a shear of an isar, then you're not allowed to sell it as if it was shlema. So Rava doesn't understand what Abai is talking about here. Amar le Rava ihachi, if that be the case, afilu mashu nami. Why does it have to be a shear of an isar? As long as it goes below that percentage, which is ona, even by a sheer kata, and the smallest amount, you're not allowed to sell it because there is ona here. So how can you tell me that between that ona and an isar, and somewhere in between the two, he's allowed to sell it as if it was a matbea shlema? That for sure would be an isar ona. El Amar Rav, we have to reinterpret this Tana. Pachasa sela Isar lidinar asur. That if the pchas, if the shchika, and we spoke about erosion of the sela was equal to an isar for every dinar of a sela, that means that the pchas was for isrim, then you're not allowed to be motzi it. You're not allowed to use it for sale. So let's understand what Rav is saying now in his reinterpretation here. The seller went down, it was depreciated, by an iser per dinar. In other words, that's the limit for ona. It's asur. You can't use it for its, let's call it its face value. And when it says in the price of pachos mikan iser, it means to say if the seller is deficient by one iser per dinar, once the seller is eroded, and it reached the shear of ona, it cannot be used to face value, unless, as Rashi says here, the person is willing to compensate the makabel, who makes a claim, within the period of time that he's allowed up until the deadline, and ustama kirabi meir, the ruling of this brisa is reflected by the shita of Rabbi Meir. In other words, Rabbi Meir set the shear of the ona as one isar per dinar. Rabbi Yehuda set it at a pudyon per dinar, pudyon per dinar. Rabbi Shimon at two pudyonos per dinar. The brisa that a seller becomes ona when it goes down by an isar per dinar, and it cannot be used as its face value, that's a reflection of Rabbi Meir. But the principle that a seller that became eroded by the limit of Onam and not be used, that's true according to all the Tanoim, respectively, each one according to his shear of Onam. So the Isa Ledinar is going to reflect the view of Rabbi Meir. Let's go back to the Mishnah for a second. Back on Nun Aleph Amid Beis. And Rav Meir says, Isa Ludina. Oh. So again, once it goes down to the Shiro No, then you're not allowed to use it at its value. And that's called Pachas Mikad Isa in the language of the Braisa. And that's clear according to Rav Meir, but according to all the Tanoim, respectively, according to their particular Shir of Onah. Tanan Hasam, we learned in a Mishnah. Now we're taking out a Mishnah in Masechta Kelim in the 12th Perek, which overlaps with our Mishnah, and it says in that Mishnah. So it's Perek Yud Beis Mishnah Zayin that a matbea is not called a kli for Kabbalah's tuma if it becomes possible is selash and nifsala, okay, viskina shiyeh shokel ba mishkolos tmeya. Now let's say this sela was taken out of legal tender, either by the Malchus or because it had such a shchika that it became more than 50% and it's not even worth a shekel. So in these cases, normally it would not be mekabel tumah. The Mishnah says, but if he designated it as to use as weights, it's called mishkolos, because they used to weigh things with silver or whatever metal they had, then he's created a new shame kli, and therefore it's mekabel tumah. But that's not the most important part of our Mishnah for us. The Mishnah continues there in Kalim. It says, Ad kama tipaches v'hei rashoi l'kaima. At what point has the shchika been so profound that up until this point he's allowed to still hold on to it, but beyond this point not? L'sela b'shnei dinrim. Okay, that we said there were four dinrim in a sela and two dinrim in a shekel, as we said. So therefore, up until half its value, he's allowed to hold on to it, maintain ownership. But pachos mikan, if the shchika was even more profound, and if as a result of this chisaron, it's worth less than two dinar, which is less than 50% of the value of the sela, then yakots, then you have to cut it up, and you got to get rid of it. Because otherwise, somebody might mistakenly think that it's worth a shekel, which is two dinarim. So if it's less than two dinarim, get rid of it. Yes, or al kein mai. What's the din if this matbea is worth more than two dinarim? So again, the value of a sela is four dinarim. Here, it's a little bit more than 50% of its value. It didn't go down to two dinarim. It's a little bit more than two dinarim. Omar av huna pochos mikan yokos. Yeser al kan yakutz. Very strange. If it's pachas mikan, that's that I understand. If it's less than 50% of its value, you got to get rid of it. But if it's more than 50% of its value, why do you have to get rid of it? And apparently, it still could be pawned off as a sela. That's Rav Huna's shita. And that's a bit strange because let's say it's 51% of its original value. Who's going to take it? Who's going to mistakenly think it's a sela? Rabbi Ami Omer, Pochas Mikan, Yokutz, but Yisrael Kan, Yikayim. In other words, Rabbi Ami argues what I think is intuitive, that anyone could see that it is it's not worth a full sela. It's only, you know, it's gone down by 49% of its metallic weight, and therefore it's Nikar Bosh and Ifchasa Misela. Nobody's going to get fooled by it. Why should you have to destroy it? Meisvei, indeed, we have a brisa which is going to contradict Lechora Rav Huna. And now we turn to Nunbeis Amid Beis. Yesar al Kain. If it's more than that, we'll see what that means. Mochra Bishav, you could sell it at face value. My love. Isn't the lashon of Yeser al Kain shepachasa yoser mikdei onasa? In other words, it went down in value, but it's still it still has most of its value. It's not as profound of an appreciation, of a depreciation as the shir ona. And yet, the Tana says that you're allowed to hold on to it and sell it kishavya b'chesrona. And what it means is that everyone can recognize how much it's gone down, and that it's going to be valued at that lower price. But it's not a problem of using it. When it says in the Brisa ad shekel b'sel ad shekel, that it's not worn down to half its price, my love, the simple understanding of this Brisa is the pachis purta purta. It's been eroded, you know, gradually, little by little, and the Brisa says you can keep it, and it has the worth until it gets down to a shekel, and that's against Rav Huna. So the Gemara is low. That's not the way you interpret the Brisa. Yesera, when it says in the Brisa, Yesera, what does it mean? Diakati lo pochasa b'chtei onasa mochra b'shavya. What does this mean? That, just one second, it means when it says yeser al kain, that if the matbea weighs, in other words, it hasn't been eroded yet to the limit, to the percentage of whatever that percentage of ona is mochra bishavya. So again, the question is how to interpret the word yeser in this brisa. Does it refer to the shchika, right, to the erosion, or does it refer to the weight of the coin? And what we're saying now is that the word yeser refers to the weight of the coin. If the coin weighs more, meaning it hasn't yet gotten to the point of the erosion of ona, then mochra bishavya. The word bishavya means not its present value, but its face value. In other words, it hasn't yet eroded to the level of ona. It hasn't yet eroded to the level of ona. That's what it means when it says yeser. The word yesera indicates here that it hasn't yet eroded to that percentage of ona. And yesera means bishavya al shiurim el. It's worth more than the shiurim. So it's let's say eroded 1/48th instead of 1/24th. Dakati lo pachasa b'chdei ona asa, therefore mochra b'shavya, as if it was a complete coin. No, it's not in its present value, but it's an original face value. And that's not a stira to Rav Huna, because the Brice is not saying anything about a sella that has eroded more than the limit of ona, but still is larger than a shekel. So it doesn't contradict Rav Huna in any sense. So Rav Huna's issue is a seller coin that's still larger than a shekel, which could be understood or mistakenly represented as a seller. That's not the subject of this Brisa. The Brisa is not talking about a case of a seller that's larger than a shekel at all. That's not the case. In any event, let's go on. The Gemara says now, Omar Mar means, let's go back to the Brisa that we saw in Omar Aleph. Yikvena v'yitlena b'tzavar b'no o b'tzavar b'ito. We could use it, again, we're talking about a coin that's completely invalid. Use it as a necklace. Ureminhi, but what about a Brisa that says, lo yase mishkal b'im mishkalosav. You shouldn't use it, this eroded coin, as a weight. Grutosov. He shouldn't throw it amongst, you know, certain fragments. Grutosov are broken kalim, silver utensils. Velo yikvenav yitlena b'tzavar b'no b'tzavar b'ito. He should not use it as a necklace. Ela o yishchok o yitoch He's going to completely destroy it. He should grind it, metal it, melt it down, cut it into pieces, throw it into the Dead Sea. But clearly you're not allowed to use it as a necklace. Amar Rabbi Lazar, lo kasha, kan ve'emtza, kan minatzad. You're not allowed to pierce it on the side. If you pierce it in the middle, that's fine. But if you pierce it on the side, that's not fine. Because although if it's pierced through and through, it won't be accepted as currency. But if the hole is at the edge, on the outer edge, then a dishonest person could cut off that entire edge, Rashi says, that includes the hole, and then pass it on illegally. Ad masai mutal hachzir. When is the deadline for claiming or not in the case of Matbea? So we saw in the Mishnah Bikrachim, Ad Sheyira Lishulchani, Bikfarim Ad Arve Shabbosos. Maishna Besela de Maflig, Umaishna Betalis de Lo Maflig. We find with regard to Talis that we give him a shear of Ad Sheyirenu Litagor. We don't have a difference between the larger cities and the smaller towns. But in the case of Sela, we make that distinction. Why is that so? And the Gemara answers on Rabbaye, Kitna nami masnisim betalis bekrochin tnan. Abaye, this is very consistent with his approach. He always says that the Mishnah, in terms of talis, is also talking about the largest cities. And Rava says, no, talis kol inish kimle begava. You don't have to go to an expert to find the exact, to evaluate the exact value of a talis. And therefore, we're going to give you a very short window of time. Sell, on the other hand, came into Lav Kolinish Kimle Bekava El Shulchani, only the money changers know, they're the experts who can evaluate the coins. Hilkoch Bekrochim Deika Shulchani, in the largest cities, there's always an availability of a money changer. This will only give you that short amount of time. And she yara l'shulchani, but bikfarim deleka shulchani. Go find the money change in the small towns. At arvi shabbos v'solkin l'shuka. When he goes out to buy his suda shabbos, he'll be able to ask the seller whether he's willing to accept this coin, and that's how he's going to be able to find out whether he was cheated or not. Then the Mishnah says, "Imhayim akira filu liachar shneimasar chodesh." If he recognized that, then even after 12 months have passed, he should still accept the coin back. Hecha. What are we talking about? Ibekrachin. If it's larger cities, or amidachi or enolishulchani, you gave him up until, but not beyond the time he shows it to the money changer. Bekfarim ha'amid ad arve shabbosos. You said that you can only give it until Erev Shabbos. How then do you come up with this 12-month period? Amar Rav Chisda, Midas Chassidus Shanukan. We're talking about a very exceptional kind of person. The person is so pious that he's willing to accept this deficient coin in return, even though the deadline is long past. Ihachim is safe. How do we read the next part of the Mishnah? Ein lo alav ela taromes. He can only have a complaint against him. Laman. Ila Chassid. If you're talking about the pious person, lo kibuli lekabli minei, didn't he accept the coin back from the person? So why is there taromas? Velo taromas tehevile. There shouldn't be any complaint against him. Ela lehech the kibul minei. Ulabasa de makabli minei taromas tehevile. So the Gemara is asking on Mimon of Shulchan Rav Chisda. The Midas Chassidus here doesn't fit in to the Ein Lo Alav Ela Taromas. Because if we're talking about a case of a Chassid who has some sort of complaint against the person who, so to speak, compelled him to receive the coin back. So if this Chassid is not such a Chassid, he's still holding a grudge here. Lo Kevulu L'Kabla Vinei. So who forced him to accept it? Accept the coin. And if he did accept the coin, then he shouldn't have any complaints. But Ella, you're going to say that by process of elimination, we're talking about the person from whom he accepted the coin. Meaning, so if Shimon gave back this coin to Reuven, and Reuven was willing to accept this coin, then why should he have any taromis? If the chassid accepted the coin and was willing to return and exchange it for a good coin, so why should the person who gave him the defective coin have any sort of taromis? On the contrary, he was willing to switch it around. He's such a chassid. Hachikomer, but rather this is what the Mishnah has in mind. Ha'acher, afal pishein mekabli menu, ein lo olav elu taromis. It would be somebody else who refused to take this coin back and switch because the deadline passed. He's not such a chassid. Is even though he is omen al midas hadin, and he's not willing to accept the coin from the person who received that coin, ein lo olav taromis. He can only have a complaint against him. It's a person's fault. In other words, he didn't return the coin within the deadline. Let him blame himself. He has no legal right to demand any sort of compensation, nor does he have any right to have any... So what does it mean, Elo Alav Elitaromis? Now, the question is, why should there be a room for Taromis? After all, he doesn't have to accept it. So let me just read to you what I found here. Just one second. Where did I misplace it here? Just one second. So the Prisha says, that's what I wanted to read to you here. B'matbea shenitna lo tsa. So there is an element of taromis here, because even if he takes it back and it's deficient, there's chasera, he can still use it. In other words, people will take it al yideh chak if you push them. You know, look around for a seller who will take it. But betalis, let's say in other items, That's not true. So he wants to be a chassan and return it after or up to 12 months. That's fine. That's midas chassidus. But if he doesn't, if he's not willing to do so and suffer the loss, there's not taromis against him. V'nos l'maisu sheni v'enu choshe she'eno elo nefesh romer of popo shma mino hai man demokim azuzei Mikri Nefesh Ra'a. From the fact that the Mishnah says that if he doesn't receive, he's not Makabal this Matbeah Shenifchasa, he's called a Nefesh Ra'a, he's some sort of a stingy type of guy, therefore, Adam Shemamid Atzmo Milakabal Matbeah Mishum Sheesh Pagam Mikri Nefesh Ra'a. Meaning, if this coin can be used, and he refuses to take it, that's not a good thing. Vahani Mili says, Rav Papa, who disagile? In other words, if he doesn't want to receive this matbea, and therefore he's called an efesh ra, that's because he could use it in business. Al yideh chak, somebody's willing to take it. Im eini yochel lischa b'afil yideh chak, that's not called a matbea at all, and if he refuses to take it, he's not called an efesh ra. Misayele, the Mishnah is a support for Rav Papa, because the Mishnah says that you can be Mechal Peres Maiser Sheni on this Sela Shenechzera. And why is that? Even though it's Kedei Ona, because of the opinion of Chizkia. L'Chizkia di Omer Chizkia, in a case of a person who has a Sela and it was Nechzera up until Kedei Ona, is Bo Lefarta, if he wants to now converted into smaller coins, in this case prutos, then part of the shavya, he's allowed to do so even at its face value. And why is that? How can he change it at its face value? And the answer has to be because there are people who are willing to take it. So someone else is gonna take it. So this nefesh ra'ah business is only when the sagila dead chak, that you know he will be able to do business with it, albeit with some difficulty, but he'll always find someone. And the Mishnah now, which allows chil peres meiser on this selah shenichzar kedei ona, is a proof for the din of Chizkiyah, who says that balafarta, that it still maintains its original value, and if he wants to change it down to prutos, is part of b'shavya. And now, what does it mean, part of b'shavya? That's what we have to figure out. The translation that I have here of b'shavya is lo is l'fi chisrona v'lo ki'ilu hi shlema, which means that not at its original value, its face value, but according to its real value. In other words, he's not, that's what Rashi seems to indicate, he can't deceive anyone and assume that this has got its original value. Bala chalala, mechalala biyafa. If he wants to mechalala as peros, he can mechalala as if it was shlema in the original face value. Now this would have to be understood as some sort of a separate halacha with regard to pidyon maaser sheni. And the question is, why is it that the pidyon maaser sheni allows it to go back to its original face value when it's no longer worth this value? And that's what the Gemara is going to have a problem with. Maika Omar. What is Chizkiyah saying? If he says, balafarta parta v'shavya, its real value that it is worth now, okay, that's something we understand, because otherwise he's going to violate the Isser Onah. He can't sell it and point it off as if it was a shlema. So that's not a chiddush. But mechalala biyafa, we're going to have to take that under advisement and see what that means. Tachi Kama, the Gemara says, afal pi sheba lefarta parta v'shavya. And we're talking about being porate, in other words, changing this sela into prutos in Yerushalayim at a money changer. And now he wants to buy with these coins a suda in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Maaser Sheni b'Yerushalayim. Is parta b'shavya on the lesser value. But the chiddush here of Chizkiyah is that k'shu mechalala, when he originally redeemed his peros onto these coins, which are Maaser Sheni, mechalala biyafa, as if they were shlema. So the chiddush of Chizkiyah is that when the Tana says nosna l'maaser sheni, it means he's allowed to be mechalala as if it was a pruta shlema. It still has a shame sela on it. And even though, you know, not too many people out there in the market are going to be so excited about accepting it as a sell on its face value, but nevertheless, once we assume that somebody who doesn't sell it is called a nefesh ra'ah, then he's allowed to be mechalal. So the Gemara says, l'meimra d'sovra chizkiya d'mezalzalin b'maiser sheni. And what does that mean, mezalzalin b'maiser sheni? This is treating Maaser Sheni lightly, if you will, on a literal translation. In other words, a seller's worth of Maaser Sheni can be redeemed on this seller shenechzera, which has a deficient cost. The market value is really less than a seller. If that's the case, then maybe we should be allowed to be mechal Maaser Sheni on a coin which is worth the exact value of the payers themselves. And that contradicts another statement of Chizkiyah. Of Amar, Chizkiyah Maaser Sheni She'en Bashova Pruta is Omer Hu V'Chomsho Mechulo Almos Harishonos. So if the Maaser Sheni is worth less than a Pruta, then he's going to have to declare it, I'm being mafrish meiser on it together with an extra chomesh, an extra fifth of its value. And then he says, mechulal almos harishonos. So that means that he has successfully achieved a chilul. Lefishi yefshalo li adam litzamtzem ma'osav. The Gemara later on Daf Nun Gimel is going to derive from a pasuk v'im gol yigal ish mimasoro. It's coming to exclude the case of ma'aser sheni she'ein bo shava pruta, which means that it's not possible to be mechalel peros ma'aser sheni if they are worth less than a pruta, and therefore the din is that he can be mechalel on most that he was already mechalel on them, ma'aser sheni, other ma'aser sheni. The Omer, and he makes the declaration of the Machal, and he says, "Hu v'chomsho mechulal almos rishonos," that the Meiser itself, which is not worth a Shava Pruta, v'achomesh sheyesh lahosif al b'yesa chilul, that when you do chilul peres ma'aser sheni, you add a chomesh in terms of the coins, yeah, mechulal almos rishonos, they should be redeemed on the original mos that he was mechalel on these mos ma'aser sheni. And why is he allowed to do so? Lefishi efshal le'adam litzamtzem ma'osav. When he's mechal peres on ma'aser sheni, it's impossible for him. What does it mean litzamtzem? To be exactly precise. K'shemechal el peros lechal bechol shovi amos. And let me just read to you the Hebrew. He says, "Kevan sheli olam hu choshe sheshivu yamos hu pachos mi erech haperos." You know, he's always worried about the fact that the value of the mos might be less than the value of the fruits that he's trying to be mechal onto these mos. Im lo yochul achilul nimtzu sheochel peres ma'is sheni chutz yishleim lo chilul. So he has to be very careful, because if this process of chilul of redemption is invalid, and he hasn't succeeded in deconsecrating his peros, then he's going to be eating peros of ma'aser sheni out of Yerushalayim without a chilul, which is a violation of a lav. Is therefore lachain mechalam tamid al matbea sheshava yoser me'amais. So he should always use a matbea that's worth more than the value of the mice. He shouldn't get involved in this kind of chashash. Uba odef. Now there's still some part of the matbea which has not been used for the chilul. Is yiftas a ma'aser shein bo shava pruta. So in the first round, when he was machal on this coin, he was machal on a coin that's worth more than the peres ma'aser sheni. So therefore, he still has some leftover value in the coin, and that's he's going to be able to use that value in the coin to be poda a second ma'aser which doesn't have a shava pruta. In any event, what do we see clearly from Chizkiah? That you're not to be mechal on a matbea mitzumtzemes that just has exactly precisely the value of the peros. You should always be large about it, you know, have extra value in the proof, in the matbea. And how much more so that you shouldn't be mechal on a matbea paguma, on a deficient coin that's depreciated because of its pchas, of its shchika and its chisaron. Because when he gets to Yerushalayim and he wants to use these mos on which he was mechal his peros to buy fruits, he's not going to be able to use it at the value of the coin, because the coin has gone down in value. So there seems to be some sort of stira in Chizkiah, and the Gemara answers, "My biyofa." What does it mean when Chizkiah says mechala biyofa? Is mechala b'toras yofa, as if it had the din of a matbea yofa? And that becomes clear from the last words of Chizkiah when he says "ei mechal al shavi al ma'at pachos." So, in other words, we're not going to be mechal onto this matbea and evaluate it as if it was a shlema. And not only that, lo kishavya pachos, even though today he can buy it and sell it in the market at a certain value, ella kishavya pachos biyoser. In other words, those people who are absolutely stingy, they don't want to take these mos under any, so they're kapdonim, and they'll give you the lowest value for these matbeos. It's even lower than the general market value. But that's the value he should use when he determines how to be mechal his peiros ma'aser sheni. And why is that? Disrei zile lo mezal zinan pe, which means ein lezalzel ma'aser sheni b'shnei zelzuzim. In other words, you're being mechalit number one on a selach hasera, and then you're going to be mechalit as if it's shlema. That's already too much. Rather, daibekach says zilzulu bo lechal al selap chusa. It's enough for zilzul on the chil process of ma'aser sheni that you're mechal on a sel that's deficient, and that's called in the Mishnah's language nosla ma'aser sheni. But ein lechal ki ilu zu sel yof, even though there may be people who will take it at face value, but rather kishavya pachos biyoser on the lowest value on the market, even those who are the kamtsonim and the kapdonim who will pay you hardly, you know, the barest minimum for that coin, that's what you want to, that's how you want to evaluate for the purpose of chilul, of chilul peres ma'aser sheni. Basically, the chilul is going to be on this reduced value. And since this defective sela that he's going to use now in Yerushalayim, and he's going to change it in Yerushalayim for its market value, not for its original face value. And sometimes it's you know, for even less, because of some, you know, some shulchanis, you know, money changes won't even pay the market value for it. They're such kabdonim. Therefore, the amount of ma'aser sheni that can be mischalel onto this. Onto these monies, it cannot exceed the yotha, which means the lower value of the particular money changes. Let's give the example here that he gives, and he says that if you have, let's say, a sela that's worth, let's say, 20 of its original 24 mos of silver, so there are many, you know, many, you know, shulchanim out there that would take it for its value of 20 mos, right? Because it is worth 20 mos on the market out of the original 24. But there are these particular money changes. These are the kabdonim. They're only going to give you 19 mos. So Chizkiah teaches us that when you bring this ma'ach hasera, the selach hasera to Yerushalayim, it's very possible that you'll be changing it with one of these particular money changes. It's only going to give you 19 mos, and therefore initially you should not use this selach hasera to be mechalel more than 19 mos worth of ma'aser sheni, even though the actual value now in the market is 20 mos. That's what you have to do. So we're going to stop here at the word gufa, and Amir Tzashem picked this up in tomorrow's Shia, and see if we can get a little bit further in the laws of chil peres ma'aser sheni.